To get to the Sun Belt Conference Championship game, the Raging Cajuns need to keep on winning. They'll try to get to win number 7 overall tonight in Conway, South Carolina. How can LSU beat Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa? Only a select few have, and they have a couple of things in common. The Saints and the Falcons. Matt Ryan, is he ready for Cam Jordan and company? And the Schwab will join us with his picks in the NFL. It's just another busy day. Today, Thursday, November the 7th, 2019.
.103 to .102. Doncic to his left. Finney Smith the screen. Around Augustine on the drive. To the rim. Able to reverse it and score. 25 for Doncic.
Harden into the front court. Harden comes left. One-on-one with Robinson. Dances, crosses, fumbles, gets it back, drives, lobs, and Capella dunks!
Bogdanović comes up, curls off, has some airspace, fires the three. Perfect! Absolutely dead, solid, perfect.
Oh, a busy night in the NBA. Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. We are ready to roll. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show. We come to you each and every day, Monday through Friday, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. The stick that stirs the drink, my producer extraordinaire, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios. Yours truly here, Studio 1A, and away we go. Just how big is this LSU-Alabama game? Well, let me tell you how LSU fans feel about Alabama. And this was a stroke of genius. An elementary school in the state hoisted up an Alabama flag on campus during LSU week and asked for $2,000 in donations in order to take it down in what they called a Beat Bama fundraiser. This according to the ABC affiliate in Baton Rouge, WBRZ. Not only did the school get $2,000, the school received $4,000 to get the Bama flag down from the flagpole. That's SEC football. That's a rivalry. That's something. And this is the first game in college football history pitting number one versus number one. And there's so much at stake. At minimum, the Bama-LSU game will decide the SEC West and will give shape to the races for the Heisman Trophy, for the national championship, and for the top pick in the 2020 NFL draft. It's the critical audition for many, many aspiring pro prospects. If you can get it done against LSU, if you can get it done against Bama, you can get it done in the NFL. And, of course, most obviously, that's the Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, as the lead actors. It's the most anticipated quarterback duel in the regular season, and I don't know how long. And if the offenses live up to the hype and do what they have done all year long, this game will put an exclamation point on just how much the game has changed. Look, these same two teams began the decade by staging the most celebrated defensive battle and field goal game ever. And it may end up by lighting up the scoreboard in a triumph for the evolution of the spread offense. It's a must-win for both sides, of course, albeit maybe not necessarily for the same reasons. For Alabama, it's strictly business. The Crimson Tide hadn't faced a worthy opponent all year long. And they can't count on the playoff committee to forgive a loss in their only really big game. So reputation aside, beating LSU en route to winning the West is likely the only realistic path to Nick Saban's seventh national title. For LSU, it's a whole different vibe. Let's be honest. Alabama is LSU's white whale. They've lost eight consecutive in the series, managing a grand total of three touchdowns in the past five games. Last year's 29-zip blowout in Baton Rouge was LSU's most lopsided loss versus Bama since 2002, and it was the third worst since World War II. After years of trying and failing to outmuscle the Crimson Tide on their own terms, it might have also been the moment that Coach O, ignoring every instinct that he has, decided to stop worrying and embrace the spread. And the result, the most dynamic offense in school history, a passing attack that's yet to be contained, and it looks like every bit the equal to what Alabama has been doing in Tuscaloosa, at least when Tua is healthy. So beyond setting LSU up for a playoff run, a win on Saturday would vindicate Coach O's willingness to innovate, his pursuit of Joe Burrow and passing game coordinator Joe Brady. And it would once and for all silence those who initially and widely mocked the decision to promote Ogeron to the full-time job in the first place. LSU hasn't been nationally relevant past the first Saturday in November since 2011. That's when they went to Tuscaloosa and did it in Game of the Century 1. So if this isn't the year, when is it? When is it? We've got a lot to get into today. Brody Miller will join us from The Athletic to share his thoughts on this week. Then we'll hear from Coach O. We'll hear from Nick Saban in this hour as well. In hour number two, after Hot Topics, Jeff Duncan will share his thoughts on the Tigers and the Saints. And then the Schwab makes his Thursday appearance, and we'll pick all the games in the NFL. Plus, we'll throw a little whipped cream on top and have him pick the LSU-Alabama game as well. It's all coming your way, and we are brought to you each and every day by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. It's, you know, they've got everything you need. Everything. Cleanest restrooms in the world and every product you could ever imagine. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. Now, we've got all kind of giveaways here at 103.7 The Game. One of them, man, I'm bringing my family to this one, but it's Cirque du Soleil OVO. It's a family show. It's based on the world of insects. It bustles with action, full of fun and color. And 103.7 The Game has your chance to win a pair of tickets. This amazing show's coming to the Cajun Dome, March 25th through the 29th. Get your pen, write this down, do it, put it in your phone, text CIRQUE, C-I-R-Q-U-E, to 68683. And do it often. Do it a lot. It's your chance to win a pair of tickets to this amazing show. It's the Cirque du Soleil OVO show. Again, text CIRQUE, C-I-R-Q-U-E, to 68683. Your chance to win tickets. Brought to you by 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Just four teams have won at Bryant-Denny since 2008, and those four have won by a combined total of 15 points. One was LSU back in 2011. It's hard to win at Bryant-Denny against Nick Saban, but the Tigers are loaded for the first time with the chance to do so. Brody Miller of The Athletic joins us next here on The Jordy Helpert Show.
Oh, yes, indeed, it's fun time.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers, and it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
First of all, I expect Grant to play. He hasn't practiced yet this week, but I do expect him to play.
Oh, we certainly hope so, but that's a glaring concern for LSU fans. No Michael Divinity, and we haven't seen Grant Delpit during the media viewing, and Ed Orgeron said he hasn't practiced this week, but he expects him to play. Brody Miller of The Athletic, who does a tremendous job, in-depth stories on the Tigers leading up to this ball game, is kind enough to join us. How concerned are you about the Grant Delpit factor there, Mr. Miller?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, LSU historically, when a guy does not play at any of the padded practices, I mean, or at least in the media portion, you know, he's not going to play. But I think one thing, if Ed Orgeron's being this adamant about it, I feel pretty confident he will play. I mean, it's not like Ed exactly to you know, say something like that if he doesn't mean it. And also, let's keep in mind, a year ago at this time, Braden Fehoko played this game with a torn bicep. So I think this game kind of has slightly different rules than normal. And I also heard that Delpit did eventually make it out to practice yesterday. So, I mean, I think all signs are pointing to him playing. Now, I think the greater concern is probably, you know, how close to 100% is he exactly. I think that's a thing because Grant Delpit, you know, athleticism is a rather large portion of what he does. But all signs definitely point to him playing.
We also found out, Brody, that Joe Burrow played with a separated shoulder in this game a year ago. It just seems like this is the perfect quarterback for LSU to do what no quarterback has done in quite some time, and that's to go and beat Alabama, and particularly in Tuscaloosa. It seems like he was born for this kind of moment to me.
It really is funny how he does seem to fit into every single kind of storybook, old wives' tale kind of, like, I don't know, just, you know, perfect story structure of just kind of, he fits every quarterback cliche or motif. Like, he is this gritty guy who, you know, everyone doubted and no one thought he could be the number one guy and had weak arm strength and, you know, plays through injuries and, you know, talks trash and, you know, just kind of rallies the whole team around him and then goes to this school that's never had a – well, not never, but pretty rarely has a great quarterback. And turned this team, took it out of the Stone Age, all these things. It is just kind of coming together perfectly. But, you know, sometimes real life happens and it kind of puts a damper on what seems like a perfect storyline. I mean, so, but no, if anyone could do it, I mean, I feel pretty confident saying it's Joe Burrow. I think he's there in every single sense right there along with Tua. I think I don't know what's going to happen, but nothing would shock me. I would not be remotely shocked if Joe Burrow did pull it off.
So much at stake, not only from a team's perspective, but individually with the Heisman Trophy, but there's a lot of other players that can improve their draft prowess in this game. If you can do it against LSU, if you can do it against Alabama, you can play in the NFL. So there's so much at stake. When you break this thing down, and you've seen the history between these two schools, and the fact that Alabama very rarely loses at home, and when they do, it's by a far small margin. Four losses since 2008 by a combined total of 15 points with Nick Saban as a coach. So Alabama, you got to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves, and you're going to have to play, as Saban says, a full 60 minutes. With that in mind, everybody talks about, and let's take the quarterbacks out of the equation because that obviously is the most important. Where do you look next of significance in this game?
Well, I mean, it's become a little bit of a tired storyline, but for good reason. I think that battle between, you know, probably the two best receiving cores in all of college football going against two pretty good both have really great secondaries. I think that is, you know, where this game will be decided. I think my next answer would be the line of scrimmage. I think that's really important. But at the same time, the way these two teams play, it's absolutely that receiver and cornerback matchup. You know, I think these are two teams that have shown if you're going to beat them anywhere, it's kind of in the middle of the field. It's with the shallow routes. It's attacking linebackers and nickels and safeties and getting in position, getting in space to make plays. Slants are how Alabama makes a killing. So LSU also kills with those underneath routes. And you have an Alabama team that has two freshmen starting inside linebackers. You have an LSU team that, for a multitude of reasons, just hasn't been really strong at protecting the middle. I think that is the thing that will decide this game because, listen, you got guys like Patrick Surtain and Trevon Diggs, and I'm slipping on some other names. And then you also have Christian Fulton, Derek Stingley. I mean, that's one of the best cornerback matchups you're going to see in college football this year. But the advantage still goes to those receivers. And that tells you one thing about how college football is played now, but it also just tells you how good these two receiving cores are. And I mean this in all sincerity. I've been trying to figure out a way, and I just can't quite picture either defense really stopping the other in a significant way.
Bernie Miller of The Athletic. You know, you've got six pros catching passes, and you've got secondaries with pros trying to stop them. You're absolutely correct. I firmly believe that the red zone is the key to this thing, in conjunction with all the other things that have been mentioned. You got to get down there. When you get those opportunities, you better score touchdowns. The team, the defense that can contain a team and just let them kick field goals, I think that's where this game's going to be decided.
No, I honestly will tell you I hadn't thought of it that way, but I absolutely, it's a really good point, and I completely agree with you. I think, you know, last year's a bad example because LSU couldn't get anything on offense, but right. I just think a lot of recent years would tell you that missed opportunities in some of those games. I would point to the Florida game last year, for example, when they just some of those drives that stalled inside Florida territory. I mean, those can decide games. And like you said, when you're in a shootout like this that might be, you know, I don't know, 35-31 or something in that realm, you cannot – those 4 points are going to matter between a touchdown and a field goal. So I think it's a really good point.
No doubt. No doubt. Bernie Miller of The Athletic. You've been to all these press conferences. You've talked to players throughout the course of the season. This is a – you can't deny it, but do you sense a calmness? Do you sense a true belief that this club has, that they can go in there and get this win? So a lot of people fake it, but do you sense it in their mannerisms, their attitudes, the way they look, the way they walk, all those things where you can tell if it's true or if it's a fake kind of a love?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I think there's a very clear difference between the way they approached this game last year and the way they are this year. And we've talked about this before, but I just got this last year, just the general vibe I got was this kind of, you know, us against the world, proving people wrong, kind of chomping at the bit sense around this team because they were scrappy. I don't even know if they were truly a top 10 team, but they just kept willing their way to wins. And this year there is just a different, and that manifested itself, to be clear, in a 29-0 loss where they look kind of tight and they just look so wrapped up and Alabama took advantage. I think this year there's just a very different vibe this week of, you know, LSU believes it's the best team in the country. It just flat out believes it's this good. It just confidence its offense can dominate and its defense can hold its own. And it's just kind of, yeah, there's just a different sense of, all right, let's go show it, as opposed to like, let's take them down. You know, I really think there's something to that. Am I predicting an LSU win because of that or anything like that? No, but I do think there's validity to there's a difference. And I talked to one person who actually did have a good point when we were discussing this game, somebody who's been around college football a very long time. And he said, you know, these teams might be so even, and he's interested in the fact that for once in the first time in a long time, LSU's the one with more veterans. They're the ones with the 21 and 22-year-olds, and as opposed to last year when LSU was a lot of sophomores and juniors.
The over-under for Saturday is 63 points. LSU's a six-point underdog in this thing, and that's based upon, I can't believe I'm saying this, 63. Are you kidding me? But that's just based upon the fact that Nick Saban is really tough at home. But you're right. LSU has more veterans, and that defense for Alabama is young. But I've got a funny feeling that Dave Aranda, Nick Saban's the defensive coach. I don't care what anybody says about that for Alabama. I got a firm belief that they want to step up and show up, and I'm really curious to see what Aranda comes up with to try and stop this this trio of wide receivers and somebody that doesn't get a lot of love but I think is really good. Their running back, Najee Harris, is tough. So I'm curious to see what Aranda comes up with.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's one of those things I won't even begin to try to predict what he's going to do. But, you know, I wrote a story yesterday that kind of dove into, I mean, you talk to anyone around LSU, and we even talked to Dave Aranda this summer, and he talked about all the things he's added to this defense, all the checks and adjustments that he's had to learn about through playing some of these games where teams have more than they do. And we really haven't seen it this year, and I think there's good reason for that. I think they haven't faced too many quarterbacks besides Sam Ellinger that they're really scared of. I think you start there. I think, you know, I think that there's a lot of reasons for why they didn't have to get aggressive. But it's really interesting that Dave Aranda, who, you know, is considered one of the best defensive minds in football, has been holding a lot back. So what is he going to show that we haven't seen? I think that's one of the top stories of this game. And when you get into what he might try, you know, I wonder if – I think, this, you know, Christian Fulton said that, you know, don't expect anything different. They're going to play straight man. And I think this season has shown that they're really good in just straight man. They struggle a little bit more in zone. But that's really hard to play man against this Alabama defense, you know, with those slants and whatnot, and their ability to make plays in one-on-one situations. That's really tough, which is what makes this so fun. But overall, I think the best bet for LSU is play two high safeties, try to take away that deep ball, play man coverage, and trust your run defense, which has been really good lately.
Tackle.
And, yes, and that's what I was going to say. I think if you can nickel and dime, if you can force Alabama to nickel and dime you, they can get a little impatient sometimes. They have a history of that. Tua does, I should say. Uh-huh. So I think if you can nickel and dime them, you can actually make those tackles, and they'll keep make it a 7-yard gain instead of a 15-yard one. You know what I mean? I think that's the best chance for LSU because you're not flat out stopping them, and that's just the matter. That's just the truth.
No question. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire has to play. Look. This thing may come down to the kicking game. Who has the best kicker? Is it Cade York?
Couldn't agree more.
I mean, is it Will Reichert? I mean, who is it?
That's a really good question. I think it is really setting up. No one's talked about it this week much, and I think it really is perfectly setting up. It will decide it for one of these teams, and I don't think either team would be really psyched about that. You're already starting to see Ed Orgeron kind of, you know, maybe go for it in some situations he wouldn't normally because the face is a little different right now. So if it does come down to that, then, man, that storyline can't write itself.
Bernie Miller of The Athletic, I can't thank you. I know you're busy. You got stories. What can we look forward to you now? But, you know, like 2 days before the game, leading up to the game, what you're working on real quick?
Yeah, my story for tomorrow. Hopefully you guys check it out on The Athletic. It's basically, you know, a deep dive into Ed Orgeron and how, you know, he's easy to overlook. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people around the program who've been there for Saban, Miles, all these guys, and a few of them said, you know, it surprised me, and they said Ed Orgeron is the most innovative coach that's been here, which is something that people wouldn't expect from Ed Orgeron. So it's a dive into that.
Great stuff. Keep up the great work, Brody. Thank you for your time, man. Safe travels to Tuscaloosa.
Oh, thanks for having me as always. Have a good one. Take care.
All right, buddy. Brody Miller of The Athletic. He mentioned Ed Orgeron. We'll hear from Coach O and his counterpart, Nick Saban, next. This is the Jordy Helpert Show. Tigers and the Tide. The week continues here on 103.7 The Game.
NBA scoreboard Kemba Walker makes his return, this time as a member of the Boston Celtics, to his old home, the Charlotte Hornets. Meanwhile, Oklahoma City...
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
It is time for our sound segment here on the program. Hope you're having a great day, and thanks so much for including us in it on this Thursday, November the 7th. CD back in the Master Control Suite. It's up to him to follow along with me as we guide you through this montage of sound from the two coaches that will be lined up against one another. One considered the greatest coach of all time, and another coach who was wildly mocked by the national media when LSU made him their full-time head coach, remembering what happened the last time he was a head coach at Ole Miss. But boy, has Ed O evolved and emerged. And so has LSU. Here's Coach O during his SEC teleconference call talking about Joe Burrow last year. We found out something new last year versus Alabama.
Well, you know, Joe's a competitor. He's one of the toughest players I've seen. It's no surprise to me. Joe's going to play if at all. He can play with any injury. He's going to play. He's a great competitor. He wants to win.
Of course, that was in reference to the Sports Illustrated comment that Joe Burrow told that said he had a separated shoulder that he occurred in the week of practice leading up to the Alabama game, but he still went out there and played. No separated children, knock on wood this time. He is healthy, and he is good to go. Just wants to win the game. Nick Saban, later on Wednesday, at his Wednesday presser, talked about in a game of this magnitude. It's the first time it's one versus one. LSU number one in the writers poll, Alabama number one in the coaches poll. Nick Saban on what's needed in games of this magnitude.
Well, I think in games like this, probably the number one thing that you want to try to get your team ready to do is, you know, play together as a team, have great teamwork. Everybody do their job at a very high standard in a very positive way. And play smart, you know, be intelligent, because, you know, the team that makes a lot of mental errors or whatever is not going to put themselves in the best position to have success. So that's something that we've been really trying to harp on this week in practice. The players have responded really well. You know, how you prepare for a game is what sort of makes you feel confident when you go into the game that you can do your job and do those things well.
They're not going to beat themselves. You're going to have to earn the win. There is no question about that. Coach O, though, feels really, really good about this weekend.
You know, our guys are confident, confident in the game plan, confident in our abilities. We've been in some big games. We've been on the road. We've been in a hostile crowd. I really like our football team. We feel good about this weekend.
Feel good about it. So does Nick Saban. But he realizes that this is unique, and this is going to be a great challenge that he has to have in facing this LSU team.
You know, this is a great challenge for our team, playing, you know, probably the best team in the country. I think the number one team, extremely explosive on offense, still play really good on defense. You know, it's going to come down to the same old things, you know, playing with discipline, blocking, tackling, basic fundamentals, not turning the ball over, explosive plays. And, you know, people have to maintain their poise so they can do that for 60 minutes in a game. I'm sure there'll be a great atmosphere in Bryant-Denny Stadium. And, you know, if you're a great competitor, I think you look forward to challenges like this, and this will certainly be a great challenge for our team.
As it will be for LSU, for sure. Only four teams have gone into Bryant-Denny since 2008 and come up with a win, and that by a grand total of 15 points. LSU did it in 2011, a 9-6 overtime game. The year before, Auburn did it as Cam Newton rallied Auburn from a 24-zip second quarter deficit to win it 28-7. So there's two losses by a combined total of 4 points. Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M had the won it as they had a 3-touchdown lead. Cliff Kingsbury was the offensive coordinator, and the A&M had a lead. They held on to win it 29-24, and then the biggest margin was Ole Miss in 2015. Chad Kelly and company beat Alabama 43-37. All four coaches who beat Saban are now in different locales. They had a win, but they couldn't do it. Bama's won 31 straight at home by an average of 32.3 points per game. Holy cow. Holy cow. Meanwhile, Coach O, so many good wide receivers on both clubs. Defense, who can come up with some three and outs? That's going to be a key. And Coach O says, we got a couple of wrinkles that we haven't shown just yet.
We have worked with Andre Anthony. We also worked with DeMond Clark. We also worked with Ray Thornton. We have a couple of different practices that we're using this week that we haven't shown yet. So I think we're going to be fine.
Of course, that's in reference to Michael Divinity. He is no longer with the club, and that's a big loss in that perspective. Coach O summed it up, as always. You know, we can talk about the passing game. We can talk about wide receivers. But LSU, Alabama, I promise you, as Coach O says, it's going to get physical.
We're about as healthy as we've been for the whole season. Our guys feel good. They're rested. This is going to be a physical battle. It's always a war in the trenches. whoever wins the line of scrimmage, whoever wins the turnover ratio, usually wins the game.
Now, Nick Saban hates talking about it. He hates the question, but he was asked again. And here comes the same answer as we've heard ad nauseum. What about Tua, Nick?
Look, Tua's worked hard to try to get back where he has an opportunity to play. He's been able to practice some. We still don't know what his status for the game is going to be. We'll make it, you know, when the game comes. I don't know what kind of setbacks he's going to have and how he's going to continue to progress. But so there's nothing else I can really say about it. But his attitude has been great. His work ethic has been great. I think he has a real positive attitude about what he's doing because he's actually, you know, had the same injury before. And I think when you get injured, you're very apprehensive about how to go about coming back from it. But when you've had it before, I think you have a lot more positive feeling about how you can come back from it.
He'll play. Now, he's very effective, you know, in the pocket. His comfort zone is squarely in the pocket. So open field mobility isn't much of an issue, but short area maneuverability and footwork could be if Tagovailoa isn't able to plant and change direction with full confidence. And his accuracy and his velocity can both suffer if he's unable to step into throws as forcefully as he's used to. Just how much the ankle is affecting him or isn't, that ought to be apparent fairly quickly. Fairly quickly, to say the very, very least. Meanwhile, the game within the game is the recruiting game. Both of these schools go after the same players. You win some, you lose some. LSU's got players from the state of Alabama. Alabama's got players from the state of Louisiana. It just goes with the territory. Ed Orgeron talked about this recruiting class that he is working on as we speak.
Best recruiting class I've been a part of since I've been to LSU. We have some phenomenal players. We have some key players at key positions that we need. We only have a few scholarships left, and we have about 10 or 12 guys that are phenomenal players that are showing us interest. So it's going to be a great recruiting class, a recruiting class that can come in and help us right away. Obviously, we're losing Joe, so we're going to have we got Miles Brennan. We have to have somebody to step in and be a great football player for us next year. But we feel great about this recruiting class.
Alabama has 9 players from the state of Louisiana. LSU has 6 players from the state of Alabama. One point of emphasis has always been turnovers. LSU is +4 in turnovers, having committed 8. The Tigers have forced 12. Alabama excels in the turnover department at +13 for the season. They've committed just 5 turnovers while forcing 18. So other than that, I mean, they're both kind of mirror images. Alabama, 48.6 points per game. LSU, 46.8. Alabama's allowing 15 points a game. LSU's allowing 20. The difference being LSU's played a much more difficult schedule. They both run it nearly, you know, 160-plus yards a game. They both pass it for over 350 yards a game. Very, very equal. Saban has been devastatingly good when he has more than a week to prepare. And LSU always seems to face Alabama after they've had an off week. Meanwhile, Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady have had 2 weeks to prepare for the Alabama defense, which has stuffed LSU in recent years. But there's no Quinnen Williams around this time around. But there is that Saban factor and the overwhelming record of Alabama at home, and that's why the Crimson Tide are favored by nearly a touchdown. LSU's got to prove it can overcome the monster, can overcome them. Physically, LSU appears to match up better this year than a year ago or in recent years for that matter. But it's the mental aspect. Are the Tigers going to be able to overcome the stigma of having been dominated by Alabama and Saban, particularly when adversity strikes on Saturday, and you know it is. You know it is. Saban said it best. Who's going to win the turnover game? Who's going to win it? And I believe LSU's got to win the kicking game as well. You can't have a Derek Stingley Jr. fumble of a punt. And you've got to contain one of the most dangerous punt returners in college football that Alabama has. I mean, look, we can talk about the X's and the O's and all that stuff, but in games like this, it's the Jimmies and the Joes, man. You just got to play, and you got to make big plays at big opportunities. And maybe Joe Burrow needs to get hit in the locker room before the game, because Coach O says Joe reacts after he's been hit.
You know, Joe does get fired up after he gets hit, so I'm going to have him hit in the locker room before the game so he can start off like that.
One player that LSU is counting on, and look, and you have to talk about the passing game. There's no question about it. You have to, because you've got so many NFL players on both teams. Both wide receiver cores are going to play, if healthy, they're going to play at the next level. You got two quarterbacks that are, you know, vying for the Heisman Trophy. They're vying for the number one pick in the upcoming NFL draft. I mean, you don't see this very, very often. But something in the back of my mind tells me, man, who's going to run the football? Who is going to run it? Well, Nick Saban talked about LSU's weapon on the ground, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Well, he's, he's got great quickness, great change of direction. He's got a low center of gravity, and he's kind of power built, so he can run behind his pads. Really good route runner and really good receiver. So he makes a lot of people miss. He also can run with power. He has really good hands. He's very instinctive. So guy's been an outstanding player for him. Very, very productive.
He has been the most pleasant surprise, I think, of the season. Everybody thought Emory and Davis Price were going to come in and just take over. Well, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has certainly stepped up, and he's going to have to step up again on Saturday. For the Alabama side of things, Najee Harris is the man. And Alabama's always had a bruising, physical running back year in and year out. And Ed Orgeron at the SEC teleconference call talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire's counterpart, Najee Harris.
He is a bruising back. Very well coached. Has great size, has great speed and vision. The thing that's best about him, when he hits the hole, he hits it with speed, and he's hard to tackle one-on-one. He breaks a lot of tackles. Makes a lot of yards out of contact, and they also use him out the backfield, and he's catching the ball very well. I think he's an all-around back, probably the best back we're going to face this year.
They sound kind of similar, don't they? One's Harris is much bigger. He's right-handed. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, left-handed, and more of a plant that foot in the ground and make you miss. All right, the other big aspect of this game is that the president of our great country is going to be there. That means heightened security. Alabama is opening up the gates an hour earlier. Once you're in, you better stay in, because they're not letting you out. I don't know how the president is going to arrive at the stadium, because you can't land Air Force One in Tuscaloosa. It's going to have to land in Birmingham. I'm hoping he flies a helicopter and lands that sucker right in the middle of the field prior to the game, and then gets out of there so that cars can continue to drive. If you're ever around and the president's in your city, they shut the interstates down when he's traveling. So that ought to be interesting. But here's Ed Orgeron talking about his thoughts on having the POTUS attending the LSU-Bama game.
You know, I think it's good, man. If the president wants to come to a big game like this, it's good. I just hope he sits right there in the middle and cheers from both sides.
Yes. So what, yet, Coach, you don't want him pulling for the Tigers? What do you mean?
Well, I think the president needs to be neutral. If he wants to cheer for LSU, I'm a welcome as is true. Obviously, I don't think the president should be cheering for either team. I think he should be right down the middle.
Yes, indeed. All right, his counterpart, here's Nick Saban on Donald Trump coming to the game Saturday.
It's an honor, I think, that, you know, the president of the United States would, you know, be interested enough to come, you know, to the game. And I'm sure we'll do everything we can to welcome him.
I tell you the difference, and I know both of these coaches very, very well. Here's the difference. If the Secret Service came up to Ed Orgeron before the game and said, Coach, the president would like to come and speak to your team before they run out on the field for this game, Ed Orgeron would say, absolute, love to have him. Come on in. Secret Service goes to Nick Saban. Coach, the president would love to come talk to your team right before they run out on the field. Hell no. Ain't happening. Goodbye. That's the difference. That's the difference. I'm telling you. Plus, he's got a lot of skins on the wall with all those national championships. With Saban, Bama has won one more national championship since his first season. We take away the first season because he had to change, get his own players in there. But since his first season, he's got five national championships. They've only lost four games at home. The mental aspect. Does LSU firmly believe that they're going to go in there and win it? If they do, this is their best chance to ever do it since Saban's been there. We will take a timeout. We'll come back with more. Nice job, CD. Very well done. Tigers and the Tide, the buildup continues. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Well, I think that Coastal Carolina is one of the more unique teams that we play. You know, they've got some explosive playmakers on offense, some speed, some long speed, some short area quickness, run after catch. They're unique in their two-back option concepts that they run. You know, so that requires a little bit different planning. Some of the core runs that they have are unique. No other team in the league runs them. And then defensively, I think their personnel is really good. In particular, their front seven. They've got two veteran corners that are savvy and have instincts. Their defensive front is one of the best in the league, in my opinion. In particular, the nose guard and the field end. I think they're all-conference type of players. So they've got schematically and personnel-wise, they've got lots of things that can create issues for you.
But tonight at 6:30 on ESPNU, the Cajuns have some payback for the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers after the Chanticleers came in there and to Cajun Field and beat the Raging Cajuns 30-28. UL's at 6-2, bowl eligible. Coastal Carolina's at 4-4. They've lost some close games. They're coming off a wild overtime a wild win over Troy, the first time they've beaten Troy. This will be the second time the Cajuns and the Chanticleers have met up. Cajuns are the better team. They don't turn it over. If they continue to run the football well, whichever team runs the ball the best is the team that's going to win. And I keep saying it every week. Levi Lewis, step up. Have a big game. You do that, you get to 7-2. You got to keep winning to keep pace to win your side of the division so you can get back to the championship game, and who knows what's going to happen with App State down the road. They've got South Carolina. They may get beat up, and who knows. So just keep winning. Everything is right there for you with the Raging Cajuns, and I believe Billy Napier's squad will get another win on the road and come back 7-2. Yes, I do. All right. That's going to wrap up hour number one. Hour number two, lots of NFL talk. Saints, Falcons, and the Schwab makes his weekly picks. It's all coming your way after this timeout. You're listening to the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Tigers and the Tide, get here, please.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. Will Wade had his first monthly luncheon at L'Auberge Casino in Baton Rouge. As LSU is one day away from tipping it off, getting their season underway against Bowling Green tomorrow night. The team that won the SEC championship a year ago sets out to try and do it again. And it's a long journey to March Madness, but they begin it in earnest. And we begin in earnest hour number two with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, do your thing, my friend.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, so we got the Raging Cajuns tonight. Do they get to the win number seven? In doing so, does that mean that would mean they beat Coastal Carolina? So your thoughts, CD, real quick.
You know, Jordy, my thoughts are this. I think it's going to be a big win for the Cajuns tonight, simply because of the fact that they've been so darn well on the road. Yes, you've only had 5 days to prepare, but at the end of the day, I feel like the Cajuns know what Coastal Carolina is going to bring to the table after what happened last year, the way they got their behinds handed to them in a pretty demoralizing loss. They know what they need to do. They know what's at stake. They know how to handle this Thursday night bright light situation. They know how to handle this. So I think come by the end of the night, we see the Cajuns roll in a, I'd say, two-touchdown victory over the Chanticleers, one of the best names in all of college football. I think we can say right here, right now, absolutely, the Cajuns are going to be feeling pretty good and coming back from Conway, South Carolina, and making their way back over to Cajun country.
I like Ron Roberts. I like what he's done defensively. I think that everybody talks about the running game, and certainly that's fine. But I think the defense has really stepped up. I think I like the kicking game. I just think they are they're just the better team, and therefore I'm with you. I'm going with the Raging Cajuns to get to win number seven against Coastal Carolina. I'm all for it. Yes, indeed.
They have been absolutely fantastic all year long, Jordy. On the defensive front, not allowing 30 points in the last several ball games. I think that's the most impressive part of this team, Jordy. Sure, the offense has definitely looked good at times, but I feel like the biggest highlight is the fact that they were able to hold down a lot of great programs like an App State, like an Arkansas State, even a Georgia Southern team that beat App State last Thursday night. They've held them all down to 30 points. And especially last week, losing to beating Texas State 31-3, holding them to next to no points.
Yeah, they're, as Napier said earlier, they're becoming a well-rounded team, and that's dangerous. So good for them. But the Chanticleers, that is one of the greatest nicknames, as you said, in the world of sports. It's a rooster.
Yep.
And it's a very high-class rooster, if you know what I mean.
Exactly, Jordy. I know exactly where you're coming from in that aspect. And, you know, this definitely has thrown me off, kind of just running through some of the big headlines that have popped up, is of all people to be taking practice reps at wide receiver, Marcus Mariota, they're giving him some practice reps at wideout because obviously Ryan Tannehill taking over.
Oh,
and again, another example of the year, the backup quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. But Marcus Mariota, how far has that stock fallen?
Wow. Wow, that's just amazing. Man, I can't fathom that, to be honest with you. So, gee whiz, how mighty, how quickly they fall sometimes. And he obviously has little, they have no confidence in him, and obviously his confidence has been shattered as well. But he's used to that lifestyle. He's used to that paycheck. So he wants to figure out a way to stay in the game. And if that's what he needs to do, he's a great athlete, then so be it.
Exactly. He has no qualms about that at all. I think that's great for him because, again, you brought it up perfectly. He likes a steady paycheck. It's not like what we saw maybe with Tim Tebow, not necessarily being a fan of trying to pivot towards more being a tight end, where he probably would have had a lot more of a profitable career in the NFL as opposed to just sticking with his guns and trying to be a QB.
Yeah, it's the toughest position on the field. If you got a good one, cherish it, like the Saints with Drew Brees. And the Saints are doubly blessed because they've got the best backup in the league in Teddy Bridgewater. So we are really blessed. And give the Saints management and Gail Benson credit for paying the man to get him to stay. And what a reward it's been since, you know, he won those five games without Brees. Now Brees is back, and the Saints, here we come.
The million-dollar question now is, Jordy, how much will they be willing to pay him? I know this is something we'll be talking about down the road, but how much will they be willing to pay him if, and this is a big if, you see, obviously, what's going on with my Drew Brees and the free agency market. You can wind up seeing that paycheck be pretty darn high to be able to keep Teddy Two Gloves around.
I still think the next quarter, the successor to Drew Brees is not on the team right now. So I don't, you know, I got to pay Kamara. I got to pay Lattimore. I got to pay some of those players before I pay Teddy Bridgewater more than he's getting now. So this has been a great job. I expect Bridgewater to be elsewhere after this season. I just think the next quarterback for the Saints is not on the roster.
And that's going to be fun to see what happens over there. Meanwhile, the Pelicans got some slightly better news because Zion Williamson's saying he's getting stronger day by day, and he'll return from injury, as he put it, when they'll let me. Jordy, I'd be absolutely happy if you see your boy Zion get back on the court and play in his first NBA game right before Thanksgiving. Hopefully he'd be back in time for that big, big matchup against the Lakers on the 27th.
I'm not thinking that's going to happen. Now, he says he's getting stronger day by day. The trainers, he says, are telling him it's getting stronger. He can feel the difference day by day, but they're not going to rush this thing by any stretch of the imagination in any way, shape, or form. He's got to get himself back in game shape after that, because can you imagine, you know, how quickly you lose that edge? I'm thinking December. I'm hoping at the latest when they're on Christmas Day. So we'll see. That's a long ways away. Just don't rush the franchise. You don't want to compound an injury with another injury.
Yep.
He's got to get in game shape first and foremost. So err on the side of caution, please.
Err on the side of caution is definitely, to me, the way to go. Meanwhile, the Astros, I know we're in November. It's LSU Bama week, but the Astros making some headlines of their own. Seismic shakeups all the way around because Jim Crane has appointed his son, Jared Crane, to oversee the franchise's business operations instead of team president, longtime team president Reed Ryan, who'll still be with the organization in a new title, executive advisor, business relations. And then also Nolan Ryan will no longer be an advisor as well. So, Jordy, man, it's just a lot of changes in the front office, especially after what happened in the World Series, the Game 6 of the ALCS, and everything else that happened kind of after that.
That's what happens when you're the team that wins more games than any other team in baseball that season, and you don't bring home the trophy as the World Series champs. If you're staying the same, you're staying the same. So changes are being made, and we'll see. The Astros are the favorite to win it all again next year. We'll see if they can do it. So, you know, they're going to be doing it without their workhorse, Gerrit Cole. I can tell you that.
I'd agree with you wholeheartedly, Jordy. Last one before we wrap up here, and I think we got to jump over to the New Orleans Saints. Alvin Kamara, he's supposed to be back. Sean Payton talked about it. He heard it during a two-minute drill. So my question to you is, Jordy, how do you see the pie being divvied up? Because we've seen Latavius Murray step his game up in a big way. What's the percentage of the pie do you think Alvin Kamara gets in terms of touches, just in terms of rushing? Because I feel like Kamara will be used more like we've seen him in the past, and we see Murray maybe finally become that Ingram-esque guy.
You stole my thunder on that one. Here's what I do with Kamara. Here's what I do with Murray. But you don't want to tip your hat because the defense will key on it. But when I want to run the football, I'm giving it to Murray. I'm using Kamara out of the backfield in the passing game so he doesn't get hurt again and he gets back in the rhythm of things that way. So make it short passes, make it, you know, little quick things to get him the ball in space. But between the tackles, man, I'm running Murray because that's a bad boy right there. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to question Sean Payton. He's the best in the business at calling plays. No question. Thank you, CD. There are your hot topics for the day brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The BR family right there in St. Martinville for nearly 90 years. It's a family-loved tradition. Do yourself a flavor. Get a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce. Try it. You're going to love it. You're going to put it on everything because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Jeff Duncan joins us next, talking all things Nolens, the Saints, the Pels, and we'll get his thoughts on that game Saturday at around 2:30 next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
So much to talk about. Just 10 minutes we've got with our good friend from The Athletic, legendary Jeff Duncan. Jeff, thanks for the time, my friend. We got a lot to talk about with the Saints, the city of New Orleans, but I got to get your thoughts on Tuscaloosa on Saturday. You've been to so many of these games. You've seen it before. You know Nick Saban. What are your thoughts heading into the game?
Yeah, look, I'm driving over to Tuscaloosa tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to it. This is the best chance LSU's had in, I'd say, probably the last several years, I think, to knock off Alabama. I really believe one thing that's getting overlooked in this game, Jordy, is the staffs, the coaching staffs. I've always felt like, and I'm sure a lot of LSU fans have felt like, that they were kind of playing checkers and Alabama was playing chess with the X's and O's.
Yes.
And now, for the first time, I really feel like LSU has a staff that not only is on par with Alabama, but I think it might even be better. And you have to credit Ed Orgeron with the hires he's made over the last few years. This is like an NFL-caliber staff, and I think it gives them a great shot to pull off the upset over in Tuscaloosa.
And they've got the analysts now, like Alabama's had. LSU never had that before. So they've got the analysts now dissecting and going over film and presenting all this information to the coaches. I agree with you 100%. Speaking of one of those coaches, you've got the pulse of the Saints, and you know Sean Payton. Had you heard about Joe Brady before he came to LSU and has turned this passing game around?
Not, you know, at the level of what you would expect. The thing where he got on my radar screen, Jordy, last year was in talking to Drew Brees. Drew Brees would bring up Joe Brady's name unsolicited during our little press briefings with him. You'd just hear him drop Joe Brady's name here or there. He'd say, D. Carmichael, and Joe Brady came up with this, or, you know, and I always thought, who's this Joe Brady? You know, this guy is being mentioned by Drew Brees. He obviously made an impression. And so when he was hired by LSU, it made sense to me because I knew the Saints thought highly of him. For him to be able to get in that room with that brain power, Pete Carmichael, Sean Payton at such a young age, and to be able to kind of get those kind of mentions and acknowledgments, I think was a very good sign and a great credit to Ed Orgeron again and his staff for hiring him and finding him and picking him out because not a lot of people had him on their radar screen.
Yeah, they pay attention at those coaching clinics, and that's what turned them on to Joe Brady. And Ed O said, man, I like this guy. We got to get him. And, of course, the Saints highly recommend him, and the rest is history. I mentioned this earlier. Alabama's only lost four times at home since 2008, just four times. LSU in 2011, that defensive field goal kicking game. But the other three, Auburn had Cam Newton, Texas A&M had Johnny Manziel, great college quarterback, and Ole Miss had Chad Kelly. For the first time, to your point, LSU's got a quarterback that can make plays to help them win a game.
I've always said the only way to beat Alabama in this modern era of the Nick Saban dynasty, you got to have two things. You've got to have the athletes that can man up with them, and LSU always has had that. And then the second thing is you have to have an NFL-caliber quarterback. They've never had that in these matchups, and it's shown in the matchups. They've got it now. You know, we saw Deshaun Watson beat them a few years ago, and Clemson had the athletes. This is the first time they will have the staff, the quarterback, and the rest of the package that they've had for a while. And I keep coming back to Ed Orgeron, Jordy, because I think systematically each year he's made – a huge move in the offseason, whether it's hiring Greg McMahon to shore up the special teams, going out and getting Joe Burrow, yep, getting Joe Brady. He's made these moves. These were the things that were holding the program back from being elite, from contending for national championships. They've got it all taken care of now. They've got the resources. You mentioned the analysts. They've upgraded the facilities. They now have a national championship caliber mm-hmm. program. They thought they had one before. The rest of the country kind of passed them by, and I think they've got it back together. And I think it's a big credit to Ed Orgeron.
Yeah. And another game with a lot of NFL players on there. And, you know, we kept talking, hoping maybe that Joe Burrow would be the guy that that the Saints could draft later on, you know, when their name comes up in the draft. But he's going to go a little bit higher than that. So the Heisman Trophy's up for stake as well.
As well, it should be. I mean, this is how you win a Heisman Trophy. Most prestigious honor should go to the player that makes the biggest plays and impact in a game of this magnitude. I think it's going to come down to who plays best mm-hmm. between him and Tua, whose team wins. And if Joe Burrow can lead LSU to a win in this environment, on this stage, after already having authored three top 10 wins, I think he's a shoo-in to get it. If he can come out of Tuscaloosa with the win.
I want to know whoever had a bet on that before. I want to go to Vegas with him. I never saw this coming at all, but what a great season so far. So we'll see what happens. You'll be there. What a great setting it's going to be. You'll come back, and you'll watch the Saints play the Atlanta Falcons. Try and give me, for those that may not know it, kind of give us a perspective of what this game means between those two cities.
Well, I think it's one of the great rivalries in the NFL. I mean, I think it kind of goes a little bit beyond the football field, and that it's two big Southern Sun Belt powers, probably competed a lot for businesses and commerce over the years. And Atlanta, frankly, kind of left us behind here, you know, decades ago. And I think there's always going to be that kind of backdrop on the rivalry. You have a lot of residents that have lived in both cities, go back and forth to both cities. And the rivalry, I think, is now, this will be the 101st game between them. And Jordy, yeah, two franchises going in completely opposite directions.
Yes.
I mean, the Saints are 7-1, look like they're actually going to even be better in the second half. Almost everybody's healthy on the roster. You got Drew Brees back. We saw his performance a week ago. And Atlanta is just in complete disarray. They're making coaching staff changes in the middle of the season. I can't see that regime surviving. Arthur Blank invested a ton of money in that new stadium, and they're going to want some return on that investment. And Atlanta is certainly not giving it to them right now at 1-7.
Yeah, I shop at Lowe's, not at Home Depot. I hate the Falcons so much. I'm just kidding. Hey, by the way, how good is my hometown airport these days? Have you been in there?
Well, no, I've not been in it, but I was out to dinner last night with a colleague who flew in last night and said it was a complete debacle, unfortunately. I've heard all these positive reviews all day. It's beautiful now. It's spectacular. It is, once they get these kinks ironed out, I think it's going to be great. But last night, no one could get in or out. I think that's the big problem, the egress and ingress. They're going to have to fast track that flyover ramp to get it in there. It cannot be a 3 or 4 year project, unfortunately. But otherwise, it's going to be great for the city, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, don't question LSU on egress and ingress, because we still haven't figured out Tiger Stadium yet. Saints are a prohibitive favorite in this thing. Do you think they cover that thing?
Amazing, Jordy, the biggest spread in the history of the series right now. I think it's up to 13 points. It's never been above 12. Only twice has it been 12. And I think they're definitely going to cover that spread. I mean, I'm not advising anybody to go out and empty their savings account on it, but I don't see how Atlanta can stay in the game. The only way possible is if the Saints mess up themselves and turn the ball over. They haven't been doing that. They only have one fumble in the whole season. Right. By Deontay Harris, or if Matt Ryan just has one of those out-of-this-world, otherworldly performances, because he does have weapons on the perimeter, and they get in a shootout. And that's the only way, because Atlanta can't run the ball at all. They're one of the worst running teams in the league. The Saints are one of the best run defense in the league. So I think it's going to be very tough sledding for Atlanta. They're going to be one-dimensional. The dome's going to be rocking on those third downs. I could just see this thing snowballing in Atlanta pretty quickly. And you know, with Alvin Kamara and Jared Cook and Tre'Quan Smith coming back, the Saints offense with Breeze is going to be probably firing on all cylinders.
Love it. What a great season for the Saints, the Tigers. All right, you're our book critic, but you're also my food critic. Real quickly, give me a new restaurant I need to go eat and when I go back home.
There's one called Thalia down in the Lower Garden District. It's by the chef combination at Coquette. It's kind of a mid-price point place. Cannot recommend it highly enough. It's kind of down in a funky little area off Magazine Street. Excellent, excellent spot.
You're the best. Jeff Duncan is the best. No one captivates the city of New Orleans like my man Jeff Duncan. Thank you. Safe travels to Tuscaloosa and back to New Orleans. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, Jordy. I really appreciate it, buddy. Take care.
All right, you're the best. Jeff Duncan, when we come back, the Schwab will make his NFL picks. So get ready here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's week 10 of the NFL. We got some really, really good games. And, of course, we have some dogs with fleas on them. But other than that, every game becomes a little bit more. They're all important. But when the calendar turns to November, there's added significance to it. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, is kind enough to join us again on this Thursday. Good afternoon, Frank. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good. Let's start off with tonight. The Chargers are at Oakland, a big game now for both teams in the division. Chargers impressed last week at home beating the Packers. The defense was really, really good. Do you think that carries over against David Carr and the Raiders?
I don't. The Raiders have been pretty good this year. I'm pretty good at home. I think that, you know, our preconceived notions of these two teams might lead you to believe the Chargers are better, but the Chargers haven't shown much this year before last week. Now, look, maybe they're getting on a roll. They've done this before. They've, you know, started slow and then got rallied, but I'm not believing in them yet. I was really, really high in them before the season. Didn't see much of them in the first 2 months of the year, and part of that's injuries. But I just am not really a believer in the Chargers. And
you know what? They're probably going to win tonight. I'm going to be back on this bandwagon and back on believing in the Chargers, and then they're going to let me down at some point down the road. But for right now, I'm just going to pick the Raiders. I think they're a little underrated. If you look, they've played good teams. They've beat good teams. This is a team that I think deserves a little more respect than we're giving them. It's you know, when you look at the actual results, Raiders have been pretty good this year.
All right, let's go to Chicago. The Lions are at the Bears, basically an elimination game for these two. The winner stays alive in the division race. It's been well documented. We saw it personally against the Saints that Chicago's offense is dreadful, but the Lions have struggled on defense, so that might be a push. I guess the team with the better defense will win it, maybe. Who do you like in that one?
I mean, it's such a weird matchup in that the one way to beat the Detroit Lions is just to pass the ball on them. They can't stop the pass for some reason. And one of the few teams in the NFL that just simply cannot pass the ball is the Chicago Bears. So what happens? Like, you know, do the Bears finally get well, or is it just that their passing offense is so bad that even the Lions can stop them? I'm kind of on board with the Lions winning this game. I think Stafford's playing really well. I think he's one of those guys, like, you're not in the MVP race, but after you get past the first four or five obvious candidates, you're Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson and Sean Watson and Christian McCaffrey, there's a group of about five or six guys where you can make a case like this guy should be getting some consideration, and Stafford's one of them. He's played really, really well. I think I'm going to pick the Lions straight up. I just think that Mitch Trubisky's so bad right now. I mean, the whole deal of him yesterday saying, I want all the TVs turned off and Hallis Hall. This team is just not mentally tough. They're just not. Like, this is the NFL. You're going to get criticized. You're going to have some, when things aren't going well, it's not going to be all happy and everybody's thrilled with you. And they really have not dealt with this well at all. Last year was kind of a dream season. Everything went right. They didn't have anything to worry about. And I think we're seeing a little bit of their true colors this year that some adversities hit. I don't like anything I'm really seeing out of the Bears, so I think I'm going to take Lions almost by default.
Okay. Frank Schwab, editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Speaking of lines, why are the Browns favored at home over the Buffalo Bills? The Browns have been bad, but I guess this could be a season saver for them as their schedule gets a little bit softer. Bills at Cleveland.
I don't get it either, and that kind of worries me. You know, I do know this, that the Bills are one of those teams that their record doesn't match a lot of their advanced stats. A lot of the people who really crunch those numbers, and I'm one of them, I buy into that. They have the Bills really lowly ranked. As far as the biggest discrepancy between your record and what your record should be, the Bills are probably number one in that. And so I think there's a little bit of a pushback on that, but goodness, the Browns are bad. I was all about them last week. I think we were even on last week saying, you know what? If you can't beat Brandon Allen, your season's done. And they were terrible. So why? I just can't get behind the Browns right now. People are going to lose a lot of money just keeping on hoping that this is the week the Browns get turned around. They're poorly coached. The quarterback is in a slump like nobody else. They're just not a good football team right now. And hey, maybe they get better on Sunday, but I need to see it first. This team has shown, aside from that one game against the Ravens, they have shown absolutely nothing this year. So I get the Bills. At least I know they're going to play some tough defense.
They'll play tough. Carolina's at Green Bay. Has Cam Newton played his last game for Carolina?
I don't know. I'm not willing to go there yet. I get the reasons why people are saying that, and I get why the Panthers would move on. But Kyle Allen doesn't strike me as the kind of guy you're like, okay, we're fine with the next whatever happens next because we got Kyle Allen. Yeah. Cam Newton's still 31 years old, former MVP. I know he's not the same player anymore because, they ran him into the ground a little bit. But
that's right.
At the end of the day, I'll still be surprised, no matter how much cap room they're saving, if the Carolina Panthers say, we're just moving on with Kyle Allen. He's our guy. Like, he hasn't played that well. He's been fine. He's done his job. Like, I respect what he's done, but I don't think you look at him and what he's done and say, yes, this is definitely a top end NFL starter. I think he's a good backup. I think he's done well this year. I commend him, but I don't know. I'm not willing to go there yet with the whole Cam story, just because I think that's going to be a really tough cut for them to make. As far as this game goes, I like the Panthers' chances, and I think it's just McCaffrey's awesome. The Packers really aren't that good against the run. I think I'm picking the Packers to win, but very, very close. The Packers did not look good last week. They've been really up and down. Once you think they're getting going, and then they just play like they did last week. It was so inexplicable. I know they're at home. I know they're a good team. They should win this game. But I think the Panthers are a good team, too. I think it's going to be one of those really, really good games, and it's probably going to be a lot closer than people think, and maybe a coin flip at the end.
Packers got the discombobulated with the palm trees and the sunshine. They're back up where it's going to be cold. I like the Packers in this one. Saints are favored by the most points ever in their rivalry with the Falcons. They're a 13-point favorite, which is almost unheard of in NFL circles. I know the Falcons are bad. That's a lot of points.
I didn't know that about the highest spread in this rivalry. That's pretty amazing. How could you possibly even consider the Falcons right now, though? That is one bad, bad, bad football team. They are just I don't even know what to say about them anymore. I mean, let me put it this way. You're probably right. It's probably too many points, but how could you feel good about it? Yeah, I'm going to take the Falcons this week. I know it's a rivalry. I know if they have any pride left, they're going to play hard for this one. But the Saints are coming off a bye. I know the Falcons are too, but it's just why would you – you just feel bad about yourself if you're sitting there with a Falcons ticket. Let's put it that way. It's a very good football team, and we don't know how healthy Matt Ryan is. I'll just pick the Saints in a blowout just because I just can't get behind the Falcons right now. They're just such a bad football team.
I'm with you. Speaking about two bad teams, it's the Battle of New York, the Giants at the Jets.
Oh,
please tell me why I need to watch this.
Yeah, please don't. I'm just happy, very, very happy that this one is not on primetime. Because, you know, this is one of those games they might have stuck on Monday Night Football, two New York games, and thank goodness it's just stuck in the middle of the first set of games. I guess the Giants, I don't know, both of these teams are really, really bad. I mean, this is, you know, I thought the Giants actually played as well as they could on Monday night, and they still ended up losing by, like, 21. I mean, it's at home. The Jets are even worse because they go on the road. I mean, the Dolphins handled them. I mean, I watched that game, and if you didn't know the Dolphins' history this year, you really truly thought the Dolphins are a better team. Like, it wasn't a fluky win. They really, really took it to them.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll take the Giants, but I just hope to not really watch much of this game because this is just pathetic football.
Yeah, let's get to the really good ones. Frank Schwab, shut that card. I think there's three really good games, and it starts, maybe I'm wrong here, the Rams are at Pittsburgh. The Steelers have really made some strides the past few games, but the Rams' offense is a big challenge, obviously, for their defense. But the Steelers at home, Mike Tomlin's a good coach. I don't think anybody can argue that. I think this is a tough spot for the Rams. What do you think?
I'm really intrigued by this game, I'll tell you that. I'll take the Rams because of this. I just don't think Mason Rudolph's very good. I mean, you look at the last couple games for the Steelers. They beat the Dolphins, but they were down 14-0 in that game. For a long time, you thought, oh, goodness, they're going to lose home to the Dolphins. And then last week, the Colts lose their quarterback in the first quarter. The Steelers get 100-yard interception return for a touchdown, and they still needed Adam Vinatieri to miss at the end just to win at home. I just don't think they're a very good football team right now, but I think that they feel pretty good about themselves being 4-4 right now. They've rallied. They're back in the race. They look around the AFC and say, hey, there's not many good teams here. We could get a wild card. Why not? So
that's right.
I think that the Steelers are going to give a good effort. It's going to feel like a playoff game, and they might pull it out. There's reasons to believe in them and the Rams. You know, Brandon Cooks, and they haven't been that great this season. But I'm going to pick the Rams just because I'm not impressed with the Steelers right now. I just don't think they're a very good team. I don't think Mason Rudolph's really that good, but hey, you're going to get a playoff type performance or a playoff type effort out of the Steelers, and maybe that'll be enough. It's definitely one of the most intriguing games on the schedule.
Another intriguing game is the Sunday nighter. Minnesota fans are probably cringing because the record book says that Kirk Cousins is not very good in big primetime games, and the Vikings are heading into Dallas, and Dallas have won the past two, and they look pretty darn good, but they're working on a short week. So Minnesota at Dallas, Cowboys favored by three.
I think it's a great game. It's really, really fun, and when you look, I think that this might end up having some implications when we get to playoff seeding. I think that the Cowboys face this ridiculously tough schedule the next 7 weeks. If you look at it, there's not one game where you say, yeah, they're going to win that. They should win a lot of them. They should beat the Lions and whatnot. They should win at the Bears, I guess. But there's not one easy game for them until week 17 when they get the Redskins again. So the Cowboys, they can't really – they're going to need to stack up some wins here because it's not going to come easy for them. I think they play well. And, yes, I guess I'm just going to fall into this whole Kirk Cousins, he's just not good in prime time. He's just not good against good opponents. It's such a cliche, but he's made the cliche true. He's 6-13 in primetime games. I believe his record against winning teams through the end of last season was, I believe it was 6-24, maybe 5-24, something around there. It's in one of my stories. It's going to be posted this weekend. Yeah, he's been bad against good teams. That is who Kirk Cousins is. He's been bad against good teams. I'm going to go with Dallas just because of that. I think that the Vikings are a very good football team. I think that they've shown a lot these past few weeks. I think that they've at times looked like a Super Bowl contender. But until I see them be quality teams, I don't know. I thought while I was over this when they beat the Eagles, but then you look back at that Eagles game and you're kind of like, are the Eagles really good? Was that a quality win? They had cornerback injuries everywhere. I'm going to take the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are pretty good, and they understand the urgency here. This is not just a normal game for them. They can't afford to be giving up many because the schedule is so tough coming up.
The Patriots lost last weekend, so before we get to the next game, which is the game of the week, what are your power rankings for this week in the NFL?
I have Saints number one. I have Saints number one. I think the Saints are the best team in football. I don't think it's getting enough attention. I really don't. What they did without Drew Brees was phenomenal. You just don't see teams lose Hall of Fame quarterbacks and go 5-0. And it wasn't just that Teddy played really well, and that sounds weird to make that as a reason, but I think if Teddy comes in and he just plays like a Pro Bowler, you're like, well, okay, whatever. This team found ways to win, and that really impressed me. Teddy was fine. He did his job. But I think the fact that they played such good defense, that they were good on special teams, that they rallied around Bridgewater, that the guys, Michael Thomas still played well. And they were even doing this without Alvin Kamara for a couple games. I was just so impressed with that. The Saints are my number one. The number two or number three is very close for me. I know the 49ers are undefeated, and I don't think they're a fluke. But I don't – just because the Patriots went on a run and lost to the Ravens doesn't mean I think that the Patriots aren't good. I think you could – to me, I almost put the Patriots 2. I ended up putting the 49ers 2 with the Patriots almost as a 2B. They're number 3 for me. But I don't know why people – we overreact so much to one game in the NFL. unless you're the 72 Dolphins, everybody's had a bad day. It's just the Patriots. That's the right. Patriots look bad. But I'm not giving up on them or anything. They're still a quality team.
All right. Well, you mentioned the San Francisco 49ers. This is the game of the week, Seattle at San Fran. We get to see Russell Wilson against that 49er defense. I'm going to leave it at that and let you take off and run with it.
I think the 49ers are the better team here. I really do. But, Russell Wilson is just – I didn't think he could get better, and he has. I mean, this is the game. Like, look, we could look back in late January, I think it's early February, actually, and say, yeah, the day Russell Wilson won his first MVP was that Monday night against the 49ers. I mean, he is so special. Mm. He's transcendent. He's the kind of guy who doesn't matter the coaching, the teammates, the anything. He's just so good at football that he lifts everybody up on his shoulders. He is amazing. So, great game last week. I don't love picking against him in any game just because he's magical. He really is. He's a hell of a football player. But I will pick the 49ers just because they're at home. They're really good. They're really sound. They're really well coached. Mm-hmm. I think that a few extra days after the Arizona game helped them. I'll go with the 49ers. But look, I mean, we're sitting here, and I'm talking to you next week at this time, and say, wow, Russell Wilson did it, and he is the MVP favorite, and he's going to win it. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, he's just that singularly great, especially this season.
Well, we marked this game, but coming up later on in this season, the 49ers have to travel to New Orleans in the Dome, and that could be
December 8th, I believe. That's a great
home
game.
Field advantage throughout the playoffs.
I think it will be, and I think that that's – if you're asking me what's the best game in the NFL this season, that might be it. I mean, because it's kind of like last year when the Rams played at the Saints about that time of year. It's basically, hey, this is for the number one seed in the NFC. Let's see who goes and gets it.
That's the number one game in the NFL. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about two teams that have a lot of players that will be playing in the NFL, and that's Saturday when LSU, number one in the coach in the writers' poll, takes on the number one team in the coaches' poll. First time one versus one, LSU at Alabama. Come on, Frank. What do you think?
I guess if Tua doesn't play, I haven't heard the latest today. If Tua's out, then LSU's got a real puncher's chance. But Alabama's just so deep and so good. Yeah, I think he is, and I think Alabama's just so good, so deep. It's hard for me to pick against them. I hope they lose. I honestly do, just because I like new blood. I'm just kind of sick of Alabama, as most college football fans are, I assume, outside of Alabama. They just don't want the Crimson Tide back in the play. Like, why? We've seen this movie before. I hope LSU wins, but, man, they're such a machine that it's really tough to pick against Alabama.
Yeah. So many things. I mean, rankings, but you got two quarterbacks that a lot of people are saying, I know there's that line, that defensive lineman from Ohio State, but the quarterback is the quarterback, and these are the two best quarterbacks out there. We've never seen a college game like this.
I don't think, you're right, not like that. Not where, this is basically a Heisman, because, I'm a Wisconsin alum. I watched Chase Young just destroy the Wisconsin line all afternoon, like literally one of the most unblockable defensive ends I've ever seen in college football. But he's not going to win. Defensive guys don't win. Receivers don't win. It's a quarterback. Sometimes it's a running back. That's it. Like, that's the list. So, I think probably, right, whoever wins this game probably wins a Heisman, too.
I think so.
At least on the table, you'd have to assume that if somebody plays, especially if one of these guys plays really well and they win, then they would take the Heisman lead at that point. Which basically, hey, this game is going to be awesome. I'm going to be involved. I'm going to be definitely on my couch watching this one because so much NFL talent too.
The president is going to stay neutral, but Frank Schwab's pulling for LSU. Dadgummit, I like it. Yes, indeed. Frank, enjoy the weekend, buddy. Thank you so much for your time, as always.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and wrap this baby up. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helpert Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Running out of time, but if you love the combination of the NFL and Twin Peaks, then go to 1037thegame.com. Take part in the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. Say that fast five times. The Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. Every single week, you get a new chance of scoring Twin Peaks gift cards by picking the correct winners for that week's exciting NFL action. It's simple, it's fun, it's free to play. The Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge, brought to you by 1037 The Game. It was on this day, November 7th, 1991, that Irvin Magic Johnson made the stunning announcement that he was HIV positive and would be retiring from basketball immediately. on this day, November the 7th, 1991. If today's your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. If it's your anniversary, keep adding year after year after year to it. Thanks to Brody Miller, Jeff Duncan, Frank Schwab. Tomorrow, Football Friday, with the weather report from Chris Cozart and a nickel report, Jordy and the Jugs. We'll hear from Alabama with Kevin Skarbinski. Well, John Brady will preview LSU basketball. Yes, indeed. Larry Holder on the Saints. George Faust on high school football, and the Three Amigos will give you Monday's headlines on a Friday. Woo! Have a great afternoon, everybody. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.